Agnes asked. He was the only one in the room who was composed.
Because the baby is navy blue?
That is fairly compelling evidence, Magnus admitted. Could you give us a moment to get dressed?
Yes, of course, said Simon. Again, I'm very sorry.
Go now, Alex suggested.
Simon went. After a short while, Magnus emerged from the attic suite dressed in skin-tight black clothes and a shimmering gold robe. His hair was still wrecked, going every which way as if Magnus had been caught in a small personal tempest. But Simon was not going to quibble about the hair of his potential savior.
Really sorry again, said Simon.
Magnus made a lazy gesture.
Seeing your face was not the best moment of my day, Simon, but these things happen.
Admittedly, they have never happened to Alec before, and he needs a few more minutes. Show me where the child is.
Follow me, said Simon.
He ran down the stairs as fast as he had run up them, taking two at a time. He found the tableau at the threshold just as he had left it. Beatrice and Julie, the horrified audience to George's terrified and inexpert baby-holding. The bundle was now making a low, plaintive sound.
What took you so long? Beatrice hissed.
Julie still looked very shaken, but she managed to say, Hello, Magnus.
Hello again, Julie, said Magnus, once again the only calm person in a room. Let me hold the baby.
Oh, thank you, George breathed. Not that I don't like the baby, but I have no idea what to do with it.
George appeared to have bonded in the time it took Simon to run up and down a flight of stairs. He looked mushily down at the baby, clutching the bundle for a moment, and then as he handed the baby over to Magnus, he fumbled and almost dropped the baby on the stone floor.
By the angel, Julie exclaimed, hand pressed to her breast.
Magnus arrested the fumble and caught the child, holding the blanket-wrapped bundle close against his gold-embroidered chest. Magnus held the baby with more expertise than George did, which meant that Magnus supported the baby's head, and it appeared as if he might have held the baby once or twice in his life. George did not look like he was going to win any baby-holding championships. With a hand glimmering with rings, Magnus drew the blanket back a little, and Simon held his breath. Magnus's eyes traveled over the baby, his impossibly small hands and feet, the wide eyes in his small face, the curls on his head so dark a blue they were almost black. The baby's low, constant sound of complaint rose a little, complaining harder, and Magnus smoothed the blanket back into place.
He's a boy, said Magnus.
Oh, a boy, said George. He's about 8 months old, I would say, Magnus continued. Someone raised him until they could not bear it anymore, and I suppose through the recruitment of mundanes to the academy, someone thought they knew the place to bring a child they did not want.
But someone wouldn't leave their child,
George began and fell silent under Magnus's gaze. People would. People do. And the choices people make are different with warlock children, Magnus said. His voice was quiet.
So there's no chance anyone is coming back for him, said Beatrice.
Simon took the note he had found folded on the child's blanket and gave it to Magnus. He did not feel, looking into Magnus's face, that he could give it to anyone else. Magnus looked at the note, nodded. Who could ever love it? Flashed between his fingers. And then he tucked it away into his robe. There were other students gathering around them, and a rising hubbub of noise and confusion. If Simon had been in New York, he figured people would have been taking pictures of the baby with their phones. He felt a little like an exhibition in a zoo, and he was so grateful Magnus was there.
What is happening? Asked a voice from the top of the stairs.
Dean Penhallow was standing there with her strawberry blonde hair loose over her shoulders, clutching around her a black silk robe etched with dragons. Katerina stood at her side, fully dressed in jeans and a white blouse.
Seems like someone has left a baby instead of the milk bottles, she said. That was careless. Welcome, Magnus.
Magnus gave her a little wave with his free hand and a wry smile.
What? Why? Why would anyone do such a thing? What are we supposed to do with it? The dean asked.
Sometimes Simon forgot that Dean Penhallow was really young. Young for a teacher, let alone a dean. Other times he was forcefully reminded of that fact. She looked as panicked as Beatrice and Julie had.
He's much too young to be taught, said Scarsberry, peering down from the crowded staircase. Perhaps we should contact the Clave.
If the baby needs a bed,
George offered. Simon and I could keep him in our sock drawer. Simon gave George an appalled glare. George looked distressed. Alec Lightwood moved like a shadow through the crowd of students, head and shoulders above most of them, but not shoving anyone aside. He moved quietly, persistently, until he was where he wanted to be, at Magnus's side. When Magnus saw Alec, his whole body relaxed. Simon had not even been aware of the tension running all through Magnus's frame until he saw the moment when ease returned. "This is the warlock child Simon was talking about," Alec said in a low voice, and nodded toward the baby. "As you see," Magnus said, "the baby would not be able to pass for a mundane. His mother clearly does not want him. He is in a nest full of Nephilim, and I cannot think, among fairies, or shadow hunters, or werewolves, where in the world he could possibly belong." Magnus's calm and amusement had seemed infinite until a few minutes ago. Now Simon heard his voice fraying, a rope on which too much strain had been put, and which must soon snap. Alec put a hand on Magnus's upper arm, just above the elbow. He clasped Magnus's arm firmly, almost absently, providing silent support. He looked up at Magnus and then looked down for a long, thoughtful moment at the baby. "Can I hold him?" Alec asked. Surprise flew over Magnus's face, but did not linger. "Sure," he said, and put the baby in Alec's arms, held out to receive him. Maybe it was that Alec had held a baby more recently than Magnus had, and certainly more often than George. Maybe it was that Alec was wearing what seemed to be an incredibly ancient sweater, worn soft with years and faded from dark green to gray, with only traces remaining of the original color. Whatever the reason, as soon as Alec took the baby, the continuous soft whimpering noise ceased. There was still the buzzing of urgent whispers up and down the hall, but the small group surrounding the child suddenly found themselves in a pocket of hushed silence. The baby gazed up at Alec with grave eyes only a shade darker than Alec's own. Alec gazed back at the baby. He looked as surprised as anyone else by the baby's sudden hush. "So," said Delaney Scarsberry, "should we contact the Clave and put this matter before them, or what?" Magnus turned in a whirl of gold and fixed Scarsberry with a look that made him shrink back against the wall. "I do not intend to leave a warlock child to the tender mercies of the Clave," Magnus declared, his voice extremely cold. "We have this, don't we, Alec?" Alec was still looking down at the baby. He glanced up when Magnus addressed him, his face briefly dazed as a man woken from a dream, but his expression set as with a sudden resolve. "Yeah," he answered, "we do." Magnus mirrored the move Alec had made before, clasping Alec's upper arm in silent thanks or a show of support. Alec returned to looking down at the baby. It felt as if a huge weight had been lifted off Simon's chest. It was not that he had been truly worried that he and George would have to raise the baby in their sock drawer. Well, possibly a little worried. But the specter of a huge responsibility had loomed before him. This was a helpless, abandoned little child. Simon knew all too well how downworlders were viewed by Shadowhunters. Simon had had no idea what to do. Magnus had taken the responsibility. He had taken the baby from them, both metaphorically and in actuality. He had not turned a hair as he did it. He had not acted as if it were a big deal at all. Magnus was a really cool guy. Simon knew Isabel had slept over in Alicante, so she and Alec would both be with her father for one night. She was going down to the house where Ragnar Fell had once lived, where there was a working telephone. Katerina had set up another telephone in the academy. She said he could use this once. They had a telephone date. Simon was planning to tell her how cool Magnus and her brother had been. Magnus thought he might become the first recorded warlock in history to have a heart attack. He was walking around the practice grounds of Shadowhunter Academy at night because he could not stay in there and breathe stifling air with hundreds of Nephilim any longer. That poor child. Magnus had hardly been able to look at him. He was so small and so entirely helpless. He could not do anything but think of how vulnerable the child was, and how deep the misery and pain of his mother must have been. He knew what kind of darkness warlocks were conceived under and born into. Katerina had been brought up by a loving family who had known what she was and raised her to be who she was. Magnus had been able to pass for human until he was not. Magnus knew what happened to warlock children who were born visibly not human, who their mothers and the whole world could not bring themselves to accept. He could not calculate how many children there might have been down all the dark ages of the world, who could have been magical, who could have been immortal, but had never gotten the chance to live at all. Children abandoned as this one had been, or drowned as Magnus himself had almost been. Children who never left a bright magical mark in history, who never received or gave love, who were never anything but a whisper fading on the wind, a memory of pain and despair fading into the dark. Nothing else was left of those lost children. Not a spell, not a laugh, not a kiss. Without luck, Magnus would have been among the lost. Without love, Katerina and Ragnar would have been among the lost. Magnus had no idea what to do with this latest lost child. He thanked, not for the first time, whatever strange, beautiful fortune had sent him Alec. Alec had been the one who carried the warlock baby up the stairs to the attic, and when Magnus had conjured up a crib, Alec had been the one to place the baby tenderly in it. Then when the baby had started to scream his little blue head off, Alec had taken the baby out of the crib and walked to the floor with him, patting his back and murmuring to him. Magnus called up supplies and tried to make formula milk. He'd read somewhere that you tested how hot the milk was on yourself and ended up burning his own wrist. The baby had cried for hours and hours and hours. Magnus supposed he could not blame the small lost soul. The baby was finally sleeping now that the sun had set through the tiny attic windows and the whole day was gone. Alec was half sleeping, leaning against the baby's crib, and Magnus had felt he had to get out. Alec had simply nodded when Magnus said he was stepping out for a breath of air. Possibly Alec had been too exhausted to care what Magnus did. The moon shone, round as a pearl, turning the stained glass angel's hair to silver and the bare winter fields into expanses of light. Magnus was tempted to howl at the moon like a werewolf. He could not think of anywhere he could take the child, anyone he could trust the child to who would want it, who might love it. He could scarcely think of anywhere in this hostile world where the child might be safe. He heard the sound of raised voices and rushing footsteps this late out in front of the academy. Another emergency, Magnus thought. It's been one day, and at this rate, the academy is going to kill me. He went running from the practice grounds to the front of the door, where he saw the very last person he had ever expected to see in Idris. Lily Chen, the head of the New York vampire clan, with blue streaks in her hair that matched her blue waistcoat, and her high heels leaving deep indentations in the dirt. "Bane," she said, "I need help. Where is he?" Magnus was too tired to argue with her. "Follow me," said Magnus, and led the way back up the stairs. Even as he went, he thought to himself all the noise he had heard outside the academy could not possibly have been Lily alone. He thought that, but he did not suspect what was to come. Magnus had left behind a sleeping child and his worn-out love, and he opened the door on a scene of absolute chaos. For a moment, it seemed as if there were 1,000 people in his rooms, and then Magnus realized the real situation was far worse. Every single one of the Lightwood family was there, each one causing enough noise for 10. Robert Lightwood was there, saying something in his booming voice. Maris Lightwood was holding a bottle and appeared to be waving it around, giving a speech. Isabel Lightwood was standing on top of a stool for no reason in the world Magnus could see. Jace Herondale was even more mysteriously lying flat on the stone floor, and apparently he'd brought Clary, who looked at Magnus as if she were puzzled by her presence here as well. Alec was standing in the middle of the room, in the middle of the human storm that was his family, holding the baby protectively to his chest. Magnus could not believe it was possible for his heart to sink further, but it somehow struck him as the greatest disaster in the world that the baby was awake. Magnus stopped on the threshold, staring at the chaos, feeling entirely uncertain about what to do next. Lily had no such hesitation. "Lightwood!" Lily bellowed, charging in. "Ah, yes, Lily Chen, I believe. said Robert Lightwood, turning to her with the dignity of the Inquisitor and no sign of surprise. I remember you were interim representative for the vampires on the council for a time. Glad to see you again. What can I do for you? Robert was obviously doing his best to show every courtesy to an important vampire leader. Magnus appreciated that a little. Lily did not care. Not you, she snapped. Who even are you? Thick black brows shot up to the sky. I'm the Inquisitor, said Robert. I was head of the New York Institute for over a decade. Lily rolled her dark eyes. Oh, congratulations. Do you want a medal? I need Alexander Lightwood, obviously, said Lily, and swanned past the staring Robert and Maris to their son. Alec, you know that fairy dealer Mordecai? He's been selling fruit to mundanes at the edge of Central Park. Again! He's at it again! And then Elliot bit a mundane who had partaken. Did he reveal his vampire nature to anyone while intoxicated? Robert asked sharply. Lily gave him a withering look, as if wondering why he was still here, then returned her attention to Alec. Elliot performed a dance called the Dance of the 28 Veils in Times Square. It is on YouTube. Many commenters described it as the most boring erotic dance ever performed in the history of the world. I have never been so embarrassed in my own life. I'm thinking of quitting being a leader of the clan and becoming a vampire nun. Magnus noticed Maris and Robert, who did not have the best relationship and hardly ever spoke to each other, having a brief whispered consultation about what YouTube might be. As the current head of the New York Institute, Maris said with an attempt at firmness, if there is a legal downworlder activity happening, it should be reported to me. I do not talk to Nephilim about downworlder business, Lily said severely. The Lightwood parents stared at her, and then swung their heads in sync to stare at their son. Lily waved a dismissive hand in their direction. Except for Alec, he's a special case. The rest of you Shadowhunters just come in, lay down your precious law, and chop off people's heads. We downworlders can handle our business ourselves. You Nephilim can stick to chopping off demons' heads, and I will consult with you as soon as the next great evil occurs instead of the next great annoyance, which will occur probably on Tuesday, and which I, Maya, and Alec will deal with. Thank you. Please stop interrupting me. Alec, can these people even be trusted? They're my parents, said Alec. I know about the fairy fruit. The Fae have been taking more and more chances lately. I already sent a message to Maya. She's got Bat and some other boys prowling the precincts of the park. Bat's friends with Mordecai. He can reason with him. And you keep Elliot away from the park. You know how he is with fairy fruit. You know he bit that Mundy on purpose. It could have been an accident, Lily muttered. Alec gave Lily a deeply skeptical look. Oh, it could have been his 17th accident? He has to stop or he's going to lose control under the influence and kill somebody. He didn't kill the man, did he?
No, Lily said sullenly. I stopped Elliot in time. I knew you'd kill him. And then I knew you'd give me your disappointed look. She paused.
You're sure the werewolves have this in hand?
Yes, said Alec.
You didn't need to charge to Idris and spill downworlder business in front of my whole family. If they're your family, they know you can handle a little thing like this, Lily said dismissively. She ran two hands through her sleek black hair, fluffing it up.
This is such a relief. Oh, she added as if she had just noticed, you're holding a baby.
Lily tended to have laser focus. After the war with Sebastian, the Shadowhunters had been left dealing with the betrayal of the fairies and the crisis of how many institutes had fallen, and how many Nephilim had been darkened and lost in the war, their second war in a year. They were in no shape to keep a close eye on the Downworlders, but the Downworlders had lost a great deal as well. Old structures that had held their society in place for centuries, like the Praetor Lupus, had been destroyed in the war. The fairies were waiting to revolt, and the werewolf and vampire clans of New York both had brand new leaders. Both Lily and Maya were young to be leaders, and had succeeded entirely unexpectedly to leadership. Both of them had found themselves due to inexperience and not lack of trying in trouble. Maya had called Magnus and asked if she could come and visit him, to ask his advice on a few things. When she showed up, she dragged Lily along with her. Lily, Maya, and Magnus then sat around Magnus's coffee table, shouting at each other for hours. "You can't just kill someone, Lily," Maya kept saying. Lily kept saying, "Explain why." Alec had been cranky that day, having wrenched his arm almost out of its socket during a fight with a dragon demon. He'd been leaning against the kitchen counter, listening, nursing his arm, and texting Jace messages like, "Why do you say things are extinct when things are not extinct?" and "Why are you the way that you are?" until he ran out of patience. "Do you know, Lily," he said in a cold voice, putting down his phone, "that you spend more than half the time you were speaking baiting Magnus and Maya instead of offering suggestions? And you make them spend about the same amount of time arguing you down. So you're making everything last twice as long, which means you're wasting everyone's time. That's not a really efficient way for a leader to behave." Lily was so startled she looked almost blank for a moment, almost truly young, before she hissed, "Nobody asked you, Shadow Hunter." "I am a Shadow Hunter," said Alec, still calm. "The issue you're having with the mermaids, the Rio de Janeiro Institute was having the same problem a couple of years ago. I know all about it. Do you want me to tell you? Or do you want to end up with half a dozen tourists on a boat to Staten Island drowned, at least that many Shadow Hunters asking you embarrassed questions, and a little voice in your head saying, 'Wow, I wish I'd listened to Alec Lightwood when I had the chance.'" There was a silence. Maya had put an entire cookie into her mouth as they waited. Lily kept her arms crossed and looked sulky. "Don't waste my time, Lily," Alec said. "What do you want?" "I want you to sit down and help me, I suppose," Lily grumbled. Alec had sat down. Magnus had not expected the meetings to happen more than a few times, let alone to see a rapport spring up between Alec and Lily. Alec had not been entirely comfortable with vampires once. But Alec always responded to being relied on, being turned to. Whenever Lily came to him with a problem, at first haughtily, with an air of reluctance, and later with demanding confidence, Alec did not rest until he had solved it. One Thursday evening, Magnus had heard the doorbell and walked in from the bedroom to find Alec laying out glasses, and realized that the occasional emergency gatherings had become regular meetings. That Maya and Alec and Lily would unroll a map of New York to pinpoint problem areas and have heated debates in which Lily made very nasty werewolf jokes, and each of them would call the other when they had a problem they did not know how to solve. That Downworlders and Shadow Hunters alike would come to New York knowing there was a group with Downworlders and Shadow Hunters who had power and would cooperate to solve problems. They would come to consult and find out if the group could help them too. Magnus realized that this was his life now, and he would not have it different. "I like Alec so much," Lily told Magnus at a party months later, slightly drunk and with glitter in her hair. "Especially when he gets snippy with me. He reminds me of Raphael." "How dare you," Magnus replied. "You are speaking of the man I love." He was bartending. His tuxedo had a glow-in-the-dark waistcoat, which made bartending in the artful gloom of the party somewhat easier. He'd spoken without thinking, casually, and then stopped, glass in hand, winking turquoise in the party lights. He'd been talking about Raphael easily, casually insulting, as if Raphael were still alive. Lily had been Raphael's ally and backup for decades. She had been utterly loyal to him. "Well, I loved Raphael," said Lily, "and Raphael never loved anyone, I know that much. But he was my leader. If I compare anybody to Raphael, it's a compliment. I like Alec, and I like Maya." She regarded Magnus with wide eyes, pupils dilated until they were almost black. "I've never been terribly fond of you, except Raphael always said you were an idiot, but you could be trusted." Raphael had loved many people, Magnus knew. He had loved his mortal family. Maybe Lily didn't know about them. Raphael had been so careful about them. Magnus thought Raphael might have loved Lily, though not in the way she had wanted. He knew Raphael had trusted her, and Raphael had trusted Magnus. They stood together, these two Raphael had trusted, in one of those quietly terrible moments remembering the dead and knowing you would never see them again. "Do you want another drink?" Magnus asked. "I can be trusted to make you another drink."
Bring on the party O negative. I'm feeling frisky, Lily told him. She stared off into the distance as Magnus made her drink, her eyes fixed on showers of glitter that fell from the ceiling at intervals, but not seeing them. I never thought I'd have to lead the clan. I thought Raphael would always be there. If I didn't have sessions with Alec and Maya, I wouldn't know what to do half the time. A werewolf and a shadow hunter? Do you think Raphael would be ashamed? Magnus slid Lily's drink across the bar to her. I don't, he told her. Lily had smiled, a flash of fang beneath her plum-colored lipstick, and clutching her drink, wandered over to Alec. Now Lily stood next to Alec, having followed him to Idris, and looked at the baby in his arms. Hello, baby, Lily whispered, hovering over the child. She snapped her fangs in the baby's direction. Jace rolled lightly off the floor and to his feet. Robert, Maris, and Isabel put their hands on their weapons. Lily snapped her teeth again, entirely unaware the Lightwood family was clearly ready to mobilize and tear her into pieces. Alec looked at his family over Lily's head and shook his own head in a small, firm gesture. The baby looked up at Lily's glinting fangs and laughed. Lily clicked her teeth for him again, and he laughed again. What? Lily asked, looking up at Alec and sounding shy suddenly. I always liked children when I was alive. People said I was good with them. She laughed, a little self-consciously. It's been a while. That's great, said Alec. You'll be willing to babysit occasionally, then. Ha ha! I'm the head of the New York Vampire Clan, and I'm much too important, Lily told him. But I'll see him when I drop by your place. Magnus wondered how long Alec was envisioning it would be until they found the baby at home. Alec must think that it would take a while, and Magnus feared Alec was right. He watched Alec, his head bowed over the baby in his arms, leaning toward Lily as they murmured to the baby together. Alec did not seem too upset, he thought. It was Lily who, after a space of baby whispering, began to look a little uneasy. It occurs to me that I might be intruding, Lily said. Oh, really? Asked Isabel, her arms crossed. Do you think? Sorry, Alec, said Lily, pointedly not apologizing to anyone else. See you in New York. Come back quick or some fool will burn the place down. Goodbye, Magnus, random of the Lightwoods. Bye, baby. Goodbye, little baby. She stood on her tiptoes in high-heeled boots, kissed Alec on the cheek, and sashayed out. I do not like that vampire's attitude, said Robert in the silence following Lily's departure. Lily's all right, said Alec mildly. Robert did not say another word against Lily. He was careful with his son, Magnus had observed, painfully careful. But Robert was the one who had made the pain necessary. Robert had been thoughtless with his son in the past. It would be a long time of pain and care until things were right between them. Both Robert and Alec were trying. That was why Alec had stayed to have breakfast with his father this morning. Though Magnus was not at all sure what Robert Lightwood was doing here at the Shadowhunter Academy in the dark of night, let alone Maris, who should be running the New York Institute, let alone Isabel and Jace. Magnus was always pleased to see Clary. Hello, Biscuit, he said. Clary sidled over to the doorway and grinned up at him, a thousand gallons of trouble in a pint-sized body. Hi! What's... Magnus intended to discreetly ask what the hell was going on, but he was interrupted by Jace lying down full length on the floor again. Magnus looked down, somewhat distracted. What are you doing? I'm stuffing crevices with bits of material, said Jace. It was Isabel's idea. I ripped up one of your shirts to do it, Isabel told him. Not one of your nice shirts, obviously. One of the shirts that don't suit you and which you shouldn't wear again. The world blurred briefly in front of Magnus's eyes. You did what? Isabel stared down at him from the stool where she was standing, her hands on her hips. We're childproofing the whole suite, if you could call this a suite. This whole academy is a baby death trap. After we get finished here, we're going to childproof your loft. You're not allowed in our apartment, Magnus told her. Alec gave me a set of keys that says different, Isabel told him. I did do that, Alec said. I did give her keys. Forgive me, Magnus. I love you. I did not know she was going to be like this.
Usually Robert looked slightly uneasy whenever Alec expressed affection to Magnus. This time, however, he was staring fixedly at the warlock baby and did not even seem to hear. Magnus was starting to feel ever more disturbed by the turns this night was taking. "Why are you being like this?" Magnus asked Isabel.
"Why?"
"Think about it," said Isabel. "We had to deal with the crevices. The baby could crawl around and get his hand or his foot stuck in a crevice. He could be hurt. You don't want the baby to get hurt, do you?"
"No," said Magnus. "Nor do I intend to tear my whole life into strips and rearrange it because of a baby."
What he said sounded eminently reasonable to him. He was stunned when Robert and Maris both laughed.
"Oh, I remember thinking that way," Maris said. "You'll learn, Magnus."
There was something strange in the way Maris was speaking to him. She sounded fond. Usually she was carefully polite or businesslike. She had never been fond before.
"I expected this," declared Isabel.
"Simon told me all about the baby on the phone. I knew you guys would be stunned and overwhelmed. So I got hold of Mom, and she contacted Jace, and Jace was with Clary, and we all came right away to pitch in."
"It's really good of you," Alec said.
There was an air of surprise about him, which Magnus fully understood, but he seemed touched, which Magnus did not understand at all.
"Oh, it's our pleasure," Maris told her son.
She advanced on Alec, her hands out. She reminded Magnus of a bird of prey, talons outstretched, overcome by hunger.
"What do you say?" she said in an alarmingly sweet voice. "You let me hold the baby. I'm the one in the room with the most experience with babies, after all."
"That's not true, Alec," said Robert. "That is not true. I was very involved with all of you when you were young. I'm excellent with babies." Alec blinked at his father, who had appeared by Alec's side with Shadowhunter speed.
"As I recall," Maris said, "you bounce them."
"Babies love that," Robert claimed. "Babies love bouncing."
"Bouncing will make the baby spit up."
"Bouncing will make the baby spit up with joy," said Robert.
Magnus had, for several moments, believed that the only possible explanation was that the whole family was drunk. Now he was coming to a much worse conclusion. Isabel had come in an organized whirlwind to childproof the whole suite. She had been able to persuade Jason Clary to come and childproof too, and Maris had spoken to her son's partner with affection she had never shown before, and now she wanted to hold the baby. Maris was experiencing full-on grandma fever. The Lightwoods thought he and Alec were keeping the baby.
"I need to sit down," said Magnus in a hollow voice. He held onto the doorframe so he did not fall down. Alec glanced over at him, startled and concerned. His parents took their chance to pounce, hands outstretched for the baby, and Alec retreated a step. Jace sprang up from the floor, having his parapetize back, and Alec visibly came to a decision and put the baby into his parapetize arms so he had his hands free to ward his parents off.
"Mom and Dad, maybe don't crowd him," Magnus heard Alec suggesting.
Magnus found, for some reason, that his own focus had slipped to the baby. It was natural concern, he told himself. Anybody would be concerned. Jace, as far as Magnus knew, was not accustomed to children. It was not like the Shadowhunters were always babysitting for the kids down the block. Jace was holding the baby somewhat awkwardly. His golden head, his hair full of fluff and dirt from lying down on the floor dealing with crevices, was bowed over the baby, staring down into the baby's solemn little face. The baby was dressed, Magnus saw. He was wearing an orange onesie, and the feet of the onesie were shaped to look like little fox paws. Jace rubbed one of the fox paws with a brown hand, fingers scarred like a warrior's, and slim as a musician's, and the baby gave a sudden, vigorous wriggle. Magnus rushed forward, realizing he had moved only when he was halfway across the room. He also realized that everyone else had lunged forward to catch the baby, too. Except Jace had kept hold of the baby, despite the wriggle. Jace looked flat-out terrified for a minute, then relaxed and looked around at everyone with his usual air of mild superiority.
"He's fine," Jace told them. "He's tough."
He looked toward Robert, clearly remembering Robert's early words, and bounced the baby gingerly. The baby flailed, one small fist bouncing off Jace's cheek.
"That's good," Jace encouraged. "That's right. Maybe a little harder next time. We'll have you punching demons in the face in no time. Do you want to punch demons in the face with me and Alec? Do you?"
"Yes, you do."
"Jace, honey," Maris cooed, "give me the baby." "Want to hold the baby, Clary?" asked Jace in the tone one offering an enormous treat to his lady love.
"I'm good," said Clary.
The Lightwoods, including Jace, all stared at her with a kind of sad wonder, as if she had just proven herself tragically insane. Isabel had leapt down from the stool at the same time they all rushed forward, ready to catch him. She looked at Magnus now.
"Are you going to kneecap your parents so you can hold the baby?" Magnus asked.
Isabel laughed lightly.
"No, of course not. Soon his formula will be ready, then..."
Isabel's face changed, set with terrifying determination. "I am going to feed the baby. Until then, I can wait and help you guys come up with the perfect name for him."
"We were talking about that a little as we came in from Alicante," said Maris, her voice eager.
Robert made another of his lightning-swift, cat-footed and unsettling moves, this time to Magnus's side. He put a heavy hand on Magnus's shoulder. Magnus eyed Robert's hand and felt deep unease.
"Of course it's up to you and Alec," Robert assured him.
"Of course," said Maris, who never agreed with Robert on anything. "And we don't want you to do anything you're not comfortable with. I would never want the little darling to have a name associated with sadness rather than joy, or for either of you to feel like you have to do this. But we thought since, well, warlocks pick their own surnames a little later, so Bane is not part of a family tradition, we thought you might consider a memory but not as a burden." Isabel said, her voice clear, "Max Lightwood." Magnus found himself blinking, partly in perplexity, but partly because of another feeling he found much less easy to define. His vision had blurred again, and something in his chest had twisted. The mistake the Lightwoods had made was ridiculous, and yet Magnus could not help but be stunned by their offer, and how genuine and sincere it had been. This was a warlock child, and they were all Shadowhunters. Lightwood was an old, proud Shadowhunter name. Max Lightwood had been the Lightwoods' youngest son. It was a name for one of their own.
"Or, if you don't like that, Michael."
"Michael's a nice name," Robert offered into the long silence. He cleared his throat after he spoke and looked out of the attic windows into the woods surrounding the academy.
"Or you could hyphenate," Isabel said, her voice a little too bright. "Lightwood Bane, or Bane Lightwood."
Alec moved, reaching out not to take the baby, but to touch him. The baby flung a hand up, tiny fingers curling around Alec's finger as if reaching back. Alec's face, stricken since the mention of his brother's name, was warmed by a sudden faint smile.
"Magnus and I haven't talked about it yet, and we need to," he said quietly.
His voice had authority, even when it was quiet. Magnus saw Robert and Maris nodding along to it, almost unconsciously. "But I was thinking maybe Max as well." That was when Magnus realized the magnitude of the situation. It was not just a wild conclusion Isabel had leapt to and improbably convinced everyone else of. It was not just the Lightwoods. Alec thought that he and Magnus were keeping the baby as well. Magnus did go and sit down then, on one of the rickety chairs with a cushion from home placed on it. He could not feel his fingers. He thought he might be in shock. Robert Lightwood followed him. "I couldn't help but notice that the baby is blue," Robert said. "Alec's eyes are blue, and when you do the..." He made a strange and disturbing gesture and then made the sound whoosh, whoosh. "Magic. Sometimes there's a blue light." Magnus stared at him. "I'm failing to see your point." "If you made the baby for yourself and Alec, you can tell me," said Robert. "I'm a very broad-minded man, or I'm trying to be. I'd like to be. I would understand."
"If I made the baby," Magnus repeated.
He was not certain where to start. He had imagined Robert Lightwood knew how babies were made.
"Magically," Robert whispered.
"I am going to pretend you never said that to me," said Magnus. "I am going to pretend we never had this conversation.
Robert winked, as if they understood each other. Magnus was speechless. The Lightwoods continued on their quest to childproof the suite, feed the baby, and all hold the baby at once. Witch light on every side, filling the whole small space of the attic, blazed and burned in Magnus's vision. Alec thought they were keeping the baby. He wanted to name him Max.
I saw Magnus Bane and the sexy vampire lady in the hall, Marisol announced as she passed Simon's table.
John Cartwright was carrying her tray, and he almost dropped it.
A vampire, he repeated. In the academy?
Marisol looked up into his scandalized face and nodded.
A sexy one.
They're the worst kind, John breathed.
So you weren't too bad then, Simon?
Julie remarked as Marisol walked on, spinning her tail of an alluring vampire's.
You know, Simon said, sometimes I think Marisol goes too far. I know she likes jerking John's chain, but nobody's dumb enough to believe in a warlock baby and a vampire on the same day. It's too much. It makes no sense. John is going to catch on.
He poked a mysterious lump in his stew. Dinner was very late tonight, and very congealed. Marisol fibbing about vampires must have put the idea in his head. Simon looked back on drinking blood and thought it could not have been as bad as this.
You'd think she'd have enough excitement for one day, George agreed. I wonder how the poor little baby is doing. I was thinking, do you think he might change colors like a chameleon? How cool would that be?
Simon brightened.
So cool.
Nerds, said Julie. Simon took that as praise. He did feel that George had really come along under his tutelage. He had even voluntarily bought graphic novels when he was in Scotland over Christmas. Maybe someday the student would become the master.
This is hard luck for you, Simon, said George. I know you wanted to talk to Alec.
Simon's brief moment of cheer faded, and he collapsed with his face on the table. Forget about talking to Alec. When I went to tell them about the baby, I walked in on Alec and Magnus. If Alec didn't like me before, he definitely hates me now. Another old memory flashed in Simon's mind, absolutely unwelcome. Alec's pale, furious face as he looked down at Clary. Maybe Alec hated Clary too. Maybe once someone crossed him, he never forgot and never forgave, and would always hate them both. His hideous imaginings were interrupted by a sensation around their dinner table.
What? Where? When? How? Did Magnus seem like an athletic, yet tender lover? Julie demanded.
Julie, said Beatrice.
Thank you, Beatrice, said Simon.
Don't say a word, Simon, said Beatrice. Not until I have acquired a pen and a paper so I can write down everything you say. I'm sorry, Simon, but they are famous, and celebrities have to bear with this interest in their love lives. They're like Brangelina.
Beatrice rummaged through her bag until she found a notebook, and then opened it and gazed at Simon with an expectant air. Julie, Idrisborn and bred, made a face.
What is Brangelina? It sounds like a demon.
It does not, George protested.
I believe in their love.
They are not like Brangelina, Simon said. What would you even call them? Algnus? That sounds like a foot disease.
Obviously you would call them Malik, said Beatrice. Are you stupid, Simon?
I will not be distracted, said Julie. Does Magnus have piercings?
Of course he does. When would he miss an opportunity to shine?
I didn't notice, and even if I had noticed, I wouldn't discuss it, said Simon.
Oh, because people in the mundane world never obsess about celebrities and their love lives, Beatrice said. See, also, Brangelina. And that boy band George is obsessed with. He has all kinds of theories about their romances.
What boy band George is obsessed with? Simon asked slowly.
George looked shifty.
I don't want to talk about it. The band's going through some hard times lately, and it makes me too sad.
Far too many disturbing and upsetting things had happened to Simon today. He decided to stop thinking about George and the boy band.
I'm the one who grew up a subway ride from Broadway. I know people get too interested in celebrities, he said. But it's weird for me when you girls obsess over Jace or Magnus. It's weird when John trails after Isabel with his tongue hanging out.
Did George's crush on Clary weird too? Asked Beatrice.
Does this betray George Day, Beatrice? George demanded.
So I may have had certain thoughts about certain pocket-sized vixens, but I would never tell you about them. I don't want to make it weird.
Pocket-sized vixens. Simon stared.
Congratulations. You made it weird.
George hung his head in shame. It's weird for me because everybody acts as if they know famous people. But I really do know these people. They're not images, like posters to hang on the wall. They're not anything like you think they are. They have a right to privacy. It's weird because I see everyone acting like they know who my friends are, when they only know a tiny bit of them. And it's weird to see anyone acting as if they have some sort of claim on my friends and their lives.
Beatrice hesitated, then put her pen down.
Okay, she said. I can see it's weird for you, but it does come from everyone admiring what they've done. People act like they know them because they want to know them, and being admired means they have a lot of influence over other people. They can do a lot of good with that. Alec Lightwood is Sunil's inspiration to be a shadow hunter, and you, Simon. A lot of people follow you because they admire you. There might be some weirdness mixed in with being admired like that, but I think there's more good.
Oh, it's not the same for me, Simon mumbled. I mean, I don't even remember. I met my friends, including Alec, who is my friend who doesn't like me. They're the special ones. He couldn't be cool and assured like Magnus or Jace. He didn't know what Beatrice was talking about. Also, he felt suddenly paranoid over whether people were wondering if he had piercings.
Simon had no piercings. He used to be a musician in Brooklyn. He probably should have piercings.
Beatrice hesitated another instant, then tore off the page she'd written on and rolled it into a ball.
You're special too, Simon, she said, and blushed. Everybody knows that.
Simon looked at her red face and remembered George mentioning someone had a crush on him. He thought for a moment it might be Julie, and though it would be both bizarre and bizarrely flattering to have changed the heart of a Shadowhunter ice princess with his manly charms, he supposed Beatrice made more sense. He and Beatrice were really good friends.
Beatrice had the best smile in the academy.
Simon would have been thrilled to have an attractive girl he was friends with get a crush on him back in Brooklyn.
He felt mainly awkward now. He wondered if he was supposed to let Beatrice down easily.
Julie cleared her throat.
And just so you know, she said, there have been invasive questions asked about you. Also, there was an incident where someone tried to steal one of your used socks and keep it as a trophy.
Who was the sock person? Simon demanded. That's just nasty.
We never tell them anything, Julie said, and they may ask once, but they never ask again.
Her lip curled back from her teeth. She looked like a snarling blonde tiger.
Because you're a real person to us, Simon, and you're our friend.
She reached across the table and touched Simon's hand, then drew it back as if she had been burned.
Beatrice snatched Julie's hand as soon as she'd drawn it back and pulled her out of her chair and toward the corner of the room where the food was laid out.
Neither of them needed more food. They had barely touched their stew. Simon watched as it went, and then stood talking to each other in fraught whispers.
Well, they both seemed strangely upset.
George rolled his eyes.
Come on, Si, don't be dense.
You can't mean, began Simon. They can't both like me.
There was a long silence.
Neither of them like you, Simon said. You work out, and you have a Scottish accent.
Don't rub it in. Maybe girls fear me, because my keen eyes see too deeply into their souls, George said. Or maybe they are intimidated by my good looks. Or maybe...
Please don't make me talk about what a lonely bugger I am anymore.
He looked after Julie and Beatrice a little wistfully. Simon could not tell if George was wistful about Julie or Beatrice, or simply wistful about love in general. He had no idea his friends were involved in such an emotional tangle. He was surprised. He felt awkward, and he didn't feel anything else. He liked Beatrice a lot. Julie was terrible, but Simon thought of Julie telling him about her sister, and he had to admit, Julie was terrible, but he liked her too. Both of them were beautiful and badass and did not come with a burden of lost memories and tangled emotions. He wasn't even pleased they liked him. He wasn't even slightly tempted. He wished, with single-minded intensity, that Isabel was here. Not a letter, not a voice on the phone, but here.
He looked at George's sad face and offered, "Want to talk about when Magnus and Alec go and we steal their suite and make our own meals in our own little kitchen?"
George sighed. Could we really, Simon?
Or is that too beautiful of a dream? Every day would be a song. All I want is to make a sandwich, Simon. Just a humble sandwich with ham and cheese, maybe a little dab of, oh my God.
Simon wondered what a dab of, oh my God, would taste like. George had frozen, spoon to his lips, eyes fixed on a point over Simon's shoulder. Simon turned around in his seat and saw Isabel framed in the doorway of the Academy dining hall. She was wearing a long dress the color of irises, and her arms were spread wide, bracelets gleaming. Time seemed to slow like a movie, like magic, like she was a genie who could appear in a puff of glittering smoke to grant wishes, and every wish would be her.
"Surprise," said Isabel. "Miss me?"
Simon jumped to his feet. He might have knocked his bowl clear across the table and into George's lap. He was sorry, but he would make it up to him later.
"Isabel," he said, "what are you doing here?"
"Congratulations, Simon. That's a very romantic question," Isabel told him. "Am I meant to take it as, no, I didn't miss you, and I'm seeing other girls? If so, don't worry about it. Why worry when life is short? Specifically, your life, because I am going to cut off your head."
"I'm confused by what you're saying," Simon told her.
Isabel raised her eyebrows and opened her lips, but before she could speak, Simon caught her by the waist and drew her in against him, kissing her surprised mouth. Isabel's mouth relaxed, curving under his. She flung her arms around his neck and kissed him back, sultry and exuberant at once. A femme fatale and a warrior princess. All the dream girls of all his nerdy fantasies in one. Simon pulled back for a moment to look into Isabel's night-dark eyes.
"I wasn't aware," said Simon, "that there are any other girls in the world but you."
He was embarrassed as soon as he had said it. It was in no way a smooth line. It was pathetically honest, trying to tell Isabel what he had only just realized himself. But he saw Isabel's eyes shine like new stars waking in the night, felt her arm around his neck pulling him down for another kiss, and he thought to himself that the line might be a little smooth. After all, it had gotten him a girl. The girl. The only girl Simon wanted. It was midnight before Magnus got all of the Lightwoods out of their suite. Isabel had left to see Simon some time before, and Clary and Jace could usually be persuaded to go off together, but for a while he thought he was actually going to have to use magic on Maris and Robert. He shoved them out of the door while they were still giving him helpful baby tips. As soon as they were gone, Alex stumbled over to the bed and lay flat on his face, instantly asleep. Magnus was left with the baby. It was possible the baby was stunned by the Lightwoods, too. He lay in his crib staring up at the world with wide eyes. The crib was under a window, and he was in a small pool of light, moonshine shimmering on his crumpled blanket and his little fat legs. Magnus crouched down by the crib and watched him, waiting for the next eruption of screaming that meant he needed to be changed and fed. Instead, he fell asleep, too, his mouth open, a tiny blue rosebud. "Who could ever love it?" the baby's mother had written. But the baby did not know that yet. He slept, innocent and serene as any child secure of love. Magnus's mother might have thought the same despairing words. Alec thought they were keeping him. Keeping him had not even occurred to Magnus. He had thought he lived life believing 1,000 possibilities were open to him, but he had not thought of this possibility as being open to him. Family life, like Mundane's and Nephilim had. Love so secure it could be shared with someone brand new to the world and helpless. He tried out the thought now. Keeping him. Keeping the baby. Having a baby with Alec. Hours passed. Magnus hardly noticed. Time went by so quietly, as if someone had laid out the carpet of the night to muffle time's footsteps. He did not register anything but that small face until he felt a soft touch on his shoulder. Magnus did not get up, but he turned to see Alec looking down at him. The moonlight turned Alec's skin silver and his eyes a darker, deeper blue, infinitely tender. "If you thought I was asking you to keep the baby," Magnus said, "I wasn't." Alec's eyes widened. He absorbed this in silence. "You're still really young," Magnus said. "I'm sorry if sometimes it seems as if I do not remember that. It's strange to me.
Being immortal means both being young and being old are strange to me. I know it must seem strange to you sometimes. Alec nodded, thoughtful and not hurt.
You do, he said, and leaned down with one hand gripping the side of the crib, touched Magnus's hair, and gave him a moonlight soft kiss. And I never want anything but this. I never want a less strange love. But you don't have to be scared I would ever leave you, said Magnus. You don't have to be scared of what will happen to the baby, or that I will be hurt because the baby is a warlock and was not wanted. You do not have to feel trapped. You do not have to be scared, and you do not have to do this. Alec knelt down in the shadows, and on the bare, dusty boards of the attic, next to the crib, and facing Magnus. What if I want to? He asked. I'm a shadow hunter. We marry young, and we have children young, because we might die young, because we want to do our duty to the world and have all the love in the world we can. I used to think I could never do that, never have that. I used to feel trapped. I don't feel trapped now. I can never ask you to live in an institute, and I don't want to. I want to stay in New York, with you, and with Lily and Maya. I want to keep doing what we're doing. I want Jace to run the institute after my mother, and I want to work with him. I want to be part of the connection between the institute and the Downworlders. For so long I thought I could never have any of the things I wanted, except that I could maybe keep Jace and Isabel safe. I thought I could have their backs in a fight. Now I have more and more people I care about, and I want everyone I care about. I want people I don't even know. I want all of us to know we have each other's backs so we don't have to fight alone. I'm not trapped. I'm happy. I'm exactly where I want to be. I know what I want, and I have the life I want. I'm not scared of any of the things you said. Magnus took a deep breath. It was better to ask Alec than to keep imagining the wrong thing. What are you scared of, then? Do you remember Mom suggesting calling the baby Max? Magnus nodded, carefully quiet. He had never even met Alec's little brother, Max. Robert and Maris Lightwood had always tried to keep their children away from Downworlders, and Max had been too young to disobey. Alec's voice was soft, both for the baby and with memory. I was never the cool brother. I remember when Mom used to leave Max with me, when he was really little, just learning how to walk, and I was always scared he would fall down and it would be my fault. I'd constantly try to get him to obey the rules and do what Mom said. Isabel was so great with him, always making him laugh, and by the angel, Max wanted to be just like Jace. He thought Jace was the coolest, the best shadow hunter who ever lived, that the sun rose and set on him. Jace gave him a little toy soldier, and Max used to take it to bed with him. I was jealous of how much Max loved that toy. I used to give him other things, toys that I thought were better, but he always loved that soldier best. He died holding that toy for comfort. I'm so glad he had it, that he had something he loved to comfort him. It was stupid and petty to be jealous. Magnus shook his head. Alec gave him a rueful smile, and then bowed his head, looking at the floor. I always thought there would be more time, said Alec. I thought Max would get older, and he'd train with us more, and I'd help him train. I thought he would come on missions with us, and I'd have his back, the way I always try to have Jace's and Isabel's backs. He'd know his boring brother was good for something then. He'd know he could count on me, no matter what. He should have been able to count on me. He was able to count on you, Magnus said. I know that. He knew that. Nobody who has ever met you could doubt that. He never even knew that I'm gay, said Alec, or that I love you. I wish he could have met you. I wish I could have met him, said Magnus. But he knew you. He loved you. You know that, don't you? I do know that, said Alec. I always wished I could be more for him. You always try to be more for everyone you love, Magnus said. You don't see how your whole family turns to you, how they rely on you. I rely on you. Even Lily relies on you, for God's sake. You love the people you love so much that you want to be an impossible ideal for them. You don't realize that you are more than enough.
Alex shrugged, a little helplessly. You asked me what I was scared of. I'm scared he won't like me, Alex said. I'm scared I'll let him down. But I want to try to be there for him. I want him.